WISE Awards are back for 2024 and early bird entries are still open. These awards recognise the best use of digital media, marketing and commerce, and they also celebrate innovation and expertise right across the digital marketing industry. There are more categories than ever before to enter, so visit exchangewire.com/events to find out more.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the MadTech Podcast. I'm Lindsay Rowntree, I'm CRO at ExchangeWire, and today I am your host, and I am joined by fellow ExchangeWirer, Rachel Smith, CEO. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Lindsay. I don't think I've been called an ExchangeWirer before, so...
Well, I thought we need something, you know, like Googler or, you know, it'll, you know, take some work. Maybe we'll come up with a few suggestions.
Why not?
And I'm delighted to join our special guest today, Andrew Liulko, who is Chief Sales Officer at EPOM. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hello. Yeah. Well, my pleasure to join your event today, Lindsay. So it's my pleasure. And yeah.
After a couple of technical issues getting you started, we are now ready to go. And before we kick off into the news stories, Andrew, it'd be great to hear a little bit more about EPOM for those that don't know who you guys are, what you do, and your role there.
Yeah, so if briefly, then EPOM is an ad tech platform company. So we have two solutions, which are white label ad server, which is used by publishers, and the white label DSP, which is used by agencies and advertisers. So it's, they both create the ecosystem, but it's all about online advertising.
Well, isn't everything all about online advertising?
Yeah. Indeed.
It makes the world go round.
Sure does. What does Kieran used to say? Online advertising making the internet free since 1993.
Absolutely. We were going to do t-shirts, weren't we?
We were. I'm glad we didn't do that.
No, I think that might have been, not gone very well.
Step too far.
Anyway, I'm going to go straight into our first story, and this is about ad spend. So worldwide ad spend is on track to outpace global economic growth this year, according to a mid-year forecast by Dentsu and IMF data, as per Raconteur, where it's published. Ad spend is expected to rise by 5% to $754.4 billion, compared to a 3.2% increase for real GDP. Digital ad spend will lead the growth with an expected 7.4% increase. One of the reasons for this increase is cited as the rising levels of sophistication in reaching audiences and tracking the impact of advertising. And I also want to call out a couple of sectors as well that are seeing particular growth. So we are seeing growth across all sectors, across all advertising channels, but in particular travel and transport, which is 8.1%, media and entertainment at 6.5%, and finance at 6.4%. However, when we look at digital spend specifically, we actually see the largest growth in the finance and media sectors. Finance saw a 5.6% decline last year, and media entertainment saw a meagre 1.4% growth last year. But this year, they're expected to hit their heady heights of 14.5% and 13% respectively. So very interesting to see it from a sector-by-sector basis, and especially kind of where we see growth in digital versus all channels. So, Andrew, I'm going to come to you first on this one and ask you how positive you think advertisers and agencies should feel about the ad spend forecast this year and kind of what we expect to see from them. There's quite a lot of negativity around kind of the future of advertising and the future of ad spend. And we're seeing, you know, there's been lots of up and down ever since the pandemic and you know, other kind of global events that have affected things. What do you think they should be feeling and how can they take some positives from this?
Okay, so just to, as a starter, I want to kind of narrow down my expertise here because you know what? I rely on our customers' experience and what we've got because we have dozens of them across the globe, right? So I have quite a vision of this situation, but nonetheless, it's not everyone. But from our EPOM's perspective, this year is huge for us because of the football events and the Olympics both, right? So we see the booming spend of the betting titles, the betting brands, across the globe, for real. And for us, the second, how to say it, the contributor of the numbers, of the growing numbers, is iGaming, the gambling, in other words, but they like it to be called iGaming. So that's something what we see from EPOM's perspective, because this type, these two advertisers types are built their ad spend around the performance, and our platform was all the time was built and designed around the performance, and here is why we see these numbers. So it has like two aspects. One is the growing, I don't know how to say it, the budgets are growing, and the brands are conquering new markets, Latin American, APAC, and of course European markets as usual, right? And African, by the way, the African markets. So it's a global trend for us. It's on one side, and the other side is of course the European Cup and the Copa America, which is going on right now. And yeah, it's something, you know, it's something that can be compared with Christmas time. Something that budget that the companies plan in few months, so they reserve the budgets, and we have this, how to say it, high season. So that's what we see, and we when comparing the numbers with the year before the last year when the World Cup and the Winter Olympics were going on, so we have a definite increase. So that's from our perspective. I can name several, how to say it, trends, maybe, if you will ask, like, because I can see that more and more advertisers that used to spend, we call it brand budgets, when they just want to get some impressions, numbers, some affinity, some reach, and that's it. We see more and more cases when agencies and the advertisers themselves, right? So when they request for some specific performance indicators, right? So when they ask for the performance, it's maybe some first steps, but nonetheless, it's something that we track. So that's how we see it.
And do you think, I was going to ask you about if you see more performance versus brand activity happening. Obviously, as you mentioned, you're built, your platform is built around performance anyway. So I guess it stands to reason that you would see more performance than brand advertising. But do you think that the prevalence of data that exists now, and you know, as and the sophistication around tracking audiences and the impact of advertising has enabled people to go, okay, I was previously just a brand advertiser, but actually now I can focus on performance, and that can, and I can actually get real results that I couldn't have got maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
For sure. Yeah. So this, all this online, let's say, sophisticated advanced technologies, the targeting technologies, this the audience segmentation, that of course it serves very good thing. I mean, like, it helps to spend more, and advertisers definitely like the idea of spending their budgets in this advanced way, right? So the tech savvy, I mean, it's really advanced. When you couldn't imagine it like 10 years ago, you couldn't target it as good as you can do it right now, right? On one side, but how to say it correctly? I mean, like, they try to deliver the best performance on one side, on one hand, and on the other hand, we see that many of the targetings are it's like a cherry on top. It's something that advertisers like, but we do not necessarily see that it performs, but nonetheless they like it to be targeted this way, like, let's say, male, this age brackets, right? So some ranges, age ranges, and they like this Facebook like meta like audience targetings. Yeah, so yeah, but in some cases we do not see it's the real usage, right? So it doesn't reflect on the numbers, on the end numbers, but yeah, that's what we see. Of course, they like it, then they track everything, leads.
Very interesting. Rachel, I'm going to come to you now and get your thoughts on this and kind of if you think that how advertisers feel about it, you know, what challenges they might face. And obviously, in particular, we had ATS Singapore last week. So any kind of insights you have from that region, I mean, certainly Southeast Asia, kind of referring to Andrew's point about performance versus branding, a very performance-led region. Kind of what are your thoughts on this?
So I think that it's certainly something that was part of the top of the day conversation at ATS Singapore. One of the first things that we touched on was that advertising spend was set to increase even more than analysts had predicted towards the end of last year. So not only is ad spend increasing, it's increasing a bit faster than was predicted 6 months ago. So on the face of it, that is a positive story. But I think the bigger question is where those advertising budgets are going, and also whether that's what impact that's having for brands and for advertisers. So in a general sense, obviously this article highlighted a number of channels that are doing well as a result of increased ad spend. We're expecting that, you know, digital channels are really driving that growth. That's no surprise. And some of the channels that we would see, doing well during periods of ad spend growth at the moment, things like CTV, perhaps retail media, where we're seeing brands dedicate a lot of budget, that is all very interesting and good news for the advertising and marketing technology industry, right? It means more spend moving into digitized channels where there's more technology innovation happening, and it's all quite exciting and feels like a very much a growth story. So on the one hand, I think that's good news for brands and advertisers, and a lot of that's being driven by there being more inventory available in a CTV environment. There's, across the board, this digitization of our lives means that consumer behavior is shifting much more towards digital channels. So it makes sense to be dedicating budgets to those channels. And all of that feels, very logical. But on the other hand, I'm interested to know to what extent the money that is being funneled into those growing channels is really brand new advertising budgets, or is it just a repurposing of existing budgets or budgets that were dedicated to either linear advertising channels before or are telling a wider story of consumer trends, consumer behaviour trends. And so I think digging beneath that in a bit more detail is, another interesting element to this story. From a growing markets perspective, it's really interesting, Andrew, to hear you talk about where you're seeing spend go on your platform and growth, not just in EMEA, but also in APAC and particularly over in MENA and in the African regions. I think those are super interesting markets to be watching. But I think from a Southeast Asian perspective in particular, we had a lot of conversation around brands and advertisers wanting to flock to social platforms and social media type channels for things like live commerce opportunities. We know that live commerce or shoppable commerce is very popular in Asia altogether, but even in the Southeast Asian region, you're starting to see lots of new innovations happening in a live shopping and a live commerce environment, which is actually attracting fresh brand new budgets. So this is not just budgets being taken from e-commerce or elsewhere within a brand's business. These are brands starting to see some results in these channels and actually getting additional fresh spend to dedicate to those channels. And the other thing is, I found it very interesting, I moderated a panel that had a couple of advertisers on it who said that, who were both at different stages in their trajectory of dedicating money towards live commerce and shoppable commerce. But both of them said that they saw those channels very much as a full funnel activity. So we're not talking about just performance, we're talking about brand as well. And I think that's a reflection of the way in which we consume. So I'm drawing on a couple of different threads there. There's an increasing, there's a growth in global ad spend. That's good news. But where is it actually going and who is it actually benefiting? It's being underscored by this change in consumer behavior, and that's where we're starting to see the drive to particular channels. And those particular channels are being maximized as opportunities for advertising and marketing spend differently in different regions. And just one final point on challenges. Whilst it's good to see a growth in advertising investment, I think one of the issues the digital advertising industry is facing at the moment is fatigue. And so we need to be careful about the quality of the advertising that we're seeing in those channels, because it's great to be spending more money there. It's great to be thinking about growing that particular part of the industry. But what does that advertising piece look like? And I think that's one of the big challenges for brands and advertisers. And that quality, or you know, the ability to prevent fatigue, comes down to advertising quality and also the types of technology tools that we're using to target our advertising. Again, further to Andrew's last point there, you see brands moving advertising in particular channels and targeting particular, using particular parameters that aren't necessarily getting them results. As an industry, we need to be far more focused on the quality of advertising rather than the quantity of advertising.
Lots to unpick there. And in particular, Andrew, I want to get your perspective on something that Rachel said around a question to everyone as to whether this increase in digital spend is new budget or if it's coming from somewhere else, and kind of what your perspectives are on that, and if that changes channel by channel as well.
It's a good one. You should understand that I'm not really sure if this budget was shifting from other, let's say, I don't know, from some traditional media or so, some outdoors, I don't know, right? So in my opinion, it's both. I mean, the overall ad spend is growing because the level of consumption is growing, and I mean, like people are starting to consume more and more globe-wide. I mean, especially in these emerging markets, because it's, according to the numbers, people live better, they can afford more, and of course they spend more. And they get cheaper and affordable devices, more, the better internet penetration and everything, and they so here we are. We have more inventory, right? Because if the audience is growing and the number, the usage are crazy, actually, nobody could imagine that the internet will get these numbers like we have it right now 10 years ago. Really, nobody could. And it's the global trend, and I guess it will not change it, because the new generation, I mean, like, it consumes a lot of content, and of course they see ads, so they become an audience, right? I don't think so. Yeah, and the bottom line is that I guess that it's these budgets, the growing spend, is just the result of the growing economy, right? So it's not like, let's say, TV channels are getting less or much less. Maybe they get less in terms of the, how to say it, the time that people are spending in front of their screens, right? So they may losing they may lose their audience, right? Because what can I say? Yesterday when I was watching the semifinal, the European, the football match, I was watching it with my laptop, and my wife asked, like, why don't you go to the TV set, which is large, right? So why? I have no answer. It's just because, like, here, and I'm here, right? So I'm contributing to this OTT, some application that was broadcasting this match, and not watching and not turning on my TV set. So that's what's going on. That's it.
Very interesting. We've delved deep into that topic. I'm now going to move us on to our next story, which is about the ongoing saga between Apple and Epic Games. So Apple has approved Epic Games' third-party marketplace app for launch in the EU. The European Commission had rejected the submission twice over concerns that its game store was too similar to Apple's App Store. Apple has granted the app's approval under the condition that Epic would make changes to certain buttons and labels on its design. Before we go into this, just a quick timeline for those that can't remember where this all started and where we're at now. So this all started 4 long years ago in 2020. So in June 2020, Epic Games CEO Tim Sweeney criticised the iOS App Store's monopoly, advocating for a level playing field. He was not happy about the fact that to have an app on the App Store, you pay 30% for everything, basically. So any kind of commission, whatever you make on the App Store, you pay Apple 30%. And he emphasised the need for open platforms with fair competition. Then in July, he called the App Store an absolute monopoly and accused Apple of locking down software distribution and monetization. Then the following month in August, Epic Games introduced a direct payment option in Fortnite, which bypassed Apple's in-app purchase mechanism. So Apple, of course, in retaliation, removed Fortnite from the App Store. Epic then filed a lawsuit against Apple alleging anti-competitive actions. Both appealed the outcome. So in 2021, California's Ninth Circuit Court ruled in favour of Epic Games, but there's been lots of stuff in between there as well in terms of ruling over one or the other and both appealing whatever ruling came about. And then finally, this year, Epic announced that Fortnite will return to iOS in Europe through the upcoming Epic Games Store for iOS 3. And this came about because of EU pressures on Apple and Epic to resolve their dispute under the new digital rules that launched this year, the Digital Markets Act. So that's where we're at the moment. So Apple have approved the game, but they have said it looks too similar. Aspects of it look too similar to our own App Store, so please change them. So Epic Games have still said, we don't agree with you. Thanks very much, mate, for approving the game. That's very grand of you, but we still don't agree with the issues that you are citing. Anyway, I've got a question here around power and control, because it's an interesting one, right? What do you think this case tells us about Apple's power in the market and its control over the market? Rachel, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
So I think this entire saga, well, this particular chapter within the saga, Epic returning to the App Store in European markets, is just absolutely underscored by the introduction of the DMA, the Digital Markets Act, in the EU. And then concurrently, the Digital Markets Competition and Consumers Act or something here in the UK, which is pretty much like-for-like legislation. And so I think what's happened is it's a, you know, depending on who's, which side of the fence you want to sit on, it's an understandable disagreement between Apple and between Epic Games. Personally, I tend to sit more on the side of the fence where Epic is. I do think that Apple dominate and have made unreasonable requirements of any app developers that wanted to sell things through their app store. So I'm pleased to see competition authorities step in to handle this. But I think that's exactly what's happened. The dispute has ultimately been resolved by the parent in the room, which has been legislation. And I think that this is the first of many of these scenarios to unfold. So in answer to your question, Lindsay, about power, I think Apple is also, the story also contains some detail about how Apple are attempting to stick to the letter of the law and require of Epic everything they possibly can before approving their app within the App Store and doing business with them effectively. And that's within their, you know, that they have a legal right to do that. But I think this is just the start of many examples to come. And I think Apple's dominance and control over what happens in the App Store, at least in jurisdictions which have strong anti-competition laws associated with digital businesses and digital markets, is coming to an end. I think that Apple are finally realizing that at least in Europe, they are going to have to do business differently. And they're not the only big tech platform that is obviously subjected to this kind of scrutiny. I think this story links very closely to what's happening over in the US with the DOJ and Google. I know it's an entirely different kettle of fish, putting Google up into a court battle around the dominance of their ad tech platform, argument being that it's anti-competitive because they're controlling both the buy and the sell side. I just think we're going to see more and more of these pieces of legislation in sophisticated Western economies coming forward, reducing the power and control that some of these big tech platforms have over their marketplaces. And frankly, it's about time.
Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on this. And, you know, do you think that the back and forth that's happening between Epic Games and Apple at the moment, and Apple, you know, obviously saying they want to make sure that everything is being done to the letter of the law and the letter of the Digital Markets Act to ensure that they are doing everything correctly. Do you think that seeing the hassle that's being caused by this will cause other app publishers, app developers to go, this is not worth it, we'll just use Apple? And of course, to be clear to those that aren't aware, Apple's aren't doing badly out of this. They still get revenue from these developers and publishers creating these separate places to be able to go and buy apps because they're using Apple technology. So the Apple technology is being licensed and they're still getting a cut of that. But do you think other people will go, God, it's taken Epic Games 4 years to get here. Actually, was it really worth it? And I'm not going to bother if that's the kind of fuss that's going to be made about me trying to do something similar.
Well, in my opinion, well, of course, the monopoly is bad, right? Mm. So whenever you don't have a good competition, it will just cause some, how to say it, some misusage of the platform, and this Epic Game case should happen sooner or later. I mean, it's very symbolic that it happens in European Union, where the regulation is much more, I would say, intense than in US, and the tradition to intervene some, let's say, industries, the economy, in order to bring some social effects is much stronger than in US. So it's obviously that European legislation became a kind of locomotive, right? And the one who creates this trend, and other markets will follow, right? And in my opinion, it will end up with two things: with the in-app monetization diversity, okay? Let's say, because it all started with Spotify, if I'm not mistaken, the first major application who tried and who actually protected its right to monetize, to get their transaction user payments bypassing the, in that case it was Google, if I'm not mistaken, the Google's payment ecosystem. But it will obviously, it's inevitable, it will come here as well. So the app publishers will get more tools like how they can monetize their applications, I mean, how to process the money. Because as of now, it is strictly defined by Apple, actually. That's on one side. On the other side, of course, the whole this business idea of the App Store and this ecosystem, it was relying on this transaction control, on taking its part, its toll from each and every transaction, whatever it is, the subscription, some in-app purchase, whatever it is, right? So Apple took its part. It's all the time. And I guess that it will also end up with publishers, at least large publishers, paying some money for installs or something, some pennies maybe, not that much, but nonetheless, because these platforms, of course, they were designed for this, maintaining all the control situation, right? So when they take control of everything, and now when they are forced to give away this control, these tools, of course they will invent some other methods how to get paid, how to get this monetization. Of course, the very last point that I want to mention is that, of course, I like the idea of the competition. I don't like this Epic Store initial design, which is really looks like Apple, really no innovations there. It was kind of disappointment, but I hope that in future we will get some innovations, because the more players, the more innovation we've got. And as a user, from the user perspective, and that's totally fine. From the EPOM's perspective, the more players, the less monopoly is bad, the better, of course. No one likes this walled garden concept where you do it and you control all the ad dollars or pounds, whatever, right? So no one likes it. As an ad tech provider, of course, we like the diversity here. The more players, the better.
Absolutely. As you've both alluded to, the blueprint of this case between Epic and Apple applies to so many other different industries, especially ad tech, especially the walled gardens that exist here. And Andrew and Rachel, you both alluded to this. And Rachel, I'm interested in your thoughts on if you think what this tells you us about the direction of regulation in the EU. Do you think that, as Andrew alluded to, that we can see other regions, other markets using this as a blueprint for how they go about trying to instill more competition in their own markets as well?
Absolutely. Very coincidentally, the other day when I was still in Singapore and I turned on, I think it was Channel News Asia, just briefly as I was sort of getting ready in the morning, there was an interview with Margaret Vestager. And actually, she was being interviewed about something not related to the DMA at all. And then at the very end, they tacked on a question about the DMA and its passage through Parliament and, you know, what the ethos of it was. And I realized that one of the main reasons they tacked that question on to an interview that was otherwise about something else is because she was speaking to an Asian audience in a part of the world where they actually don't have very strong regulation around. They certainly have some regulation around how companies have to conduct themselves and so forth, but they don't necessarily have very strong regulation for big tech platforms around competition. And I found that very interesting. I think that they were asking her for her views on whether she thought, how effective she thought the legislation was going to be, what impact it was going to have on the EU member states, and whether other countries would follow suit. And of course, she feels very passionately that they will, because she spearheaded this legislation and she feels as though it's a really good example of how to introduce competition into a market. And so to answer your question, Lindsay, I do think that other jurisdictions are going to follow suit. We already know, as Andrew's mentioned, in the US, that legislation is well underway. Other advanced economies like Australia has got very sophisticated legislation that is looking to mirror some of these controls. I just think anywhere that has a diverse economy and is interested in protecting that diversity is going to have to bring some legislation in around anti-competition. Of course, you know, further to your point about walled gardens, Andrew, it's really interesting because I think we spend a lot of time in advertising and marketing technology talking about walled gardens. And I think there's a few different types of walled gardens now. There's the sort of walled gardens that are controlling the market and blocking out competition. And then there are walled gardens that are creating user experiences that are so compelling, they can then, gather a lot of data and information about those users and consumers and offer an enormous amount of value to advertisers that want to reach those consumers in those environments. So I think this competition legislation is timely and it needs to speed up. I think the marketplace is already moving away from dominant tech platforms because consumers are moving away from those dominant tech platforms. The argument might be that they're moving to other types of walled gardens, but let's see. The future will tell us. And as you mentioned earlier on, Andrew, actually the game of predicting the future is probably a fool's game because we never quite know where it's going and so we ought not to be too confident about anything that we predict.
Very true. Andrew, I've got a quick question for you on, talking about walled gardens. Do you find that you actually get agencies and brand advertisers and publishers to come to you because they actively want to not use the big walled gardens? They want to go with an independent player. Does that happen often?
Lindsay, you know what? Yeah, that's the average customer. I hear that all the time. When they tell us, like, we are buying now there and there, let's say Meta and, let's say, DV360, we want to try something else, but we want to keep those channels also under one umbrella. So we want to keep it in-house, sometimes as a white label, as a new entity. They have their own benefits. The agencies have their own benefits of using the white label DSP because they position it as their own programmatic platform, of course. Well, and yeah, but I can agree that it is a trend. that they the good example is can be like this. The company advertiser was spending money with Google only or with Meta only for 5 years, and now they are trying to allocate at least something on some other channels, native, whatever, OTT, by the way, the OTT ad, it's a big thing, right? So they want to explore the other channels, the other channels, ad formats, right? And the good thing is that this old, let's say oldish companies, they're not quick enough to respond, right? So they do not master all this OTT and CTV things as good as they maybe could. And here is why the new niche, the new kind of sub-industries arrived. That's how I see.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. On that note, I'm going to quickly move us on to our third story, which is the news that NBC Universal and Warner Brothers Discovery pursue programmatic ad dollars at the Olympics, which obviously ties in very well with what you were just saying, Andrew, about OTT. So programmatic is opening up the Olympics to more advertisers, with more than ever planning to show ads at this year's Games. NBCU and Warner Brothers Discovery are making inventory on the Peacock streaming platform, the Eurosport website, and supporting apps available to buy in private marketplaces for programmatic advertisers, allowing smaller brands access to the huge audiences available. And Andrew, I'll come to you first on this one. I want to ask you how you think advertisers and agencies can most effectively harness programmatic at the Olympic and Paralympic Games, and kind of what this means for them in terms of access to being able to target a new audience they wouldn't necessarily have had access to before.
Yeah, Lindsay, I have my expectations here is that, of course, they will master it somehow this year, this time, but they will do it much, much better in 4 years, right? Because it's the very first time.
A test bed.
Yeah, it's the first time. I mean, like, I guess that this time it is going to be a very traditional way, that when it's just a video advertising with no, you know, like, online extras that they could add, and except the targetings, right? But all the rest will be the same, right? But I can compare it to the World Cup, football World Cup, which happened, you know what, 30 years ago in the US. It was kind of innovative because US, right, as a World Cup holder, they brought a lot of new innovative monetization stuff to this event, right? Because they created such titles, ad titles, like a official drink of the World Cup, official sneakers, like whatever, official everything. They were selling much more stuff than World Cup organizers used to sell, right? So they found the way how to monetize the event in much better than it was before. So what I can predict, and as I can see it, that this time it will be kind of traditional, but the next time they will get prepared and they will bring some very unique, you know, like in-app experiences, like we see that, like some of our, you know what, some customers, so people do, when, because a quick, very quick example, it refers not to the Olympics, but to the gaming, right? But when they integrate the branding ads into the in-game experience, where people are just playing the game, some characters, you know, like some fantasy world, but when he's passing some by some crystals and won this crystal, and there is the little, let's say, brand, some logo of some company, I don't know, Pizza Hut or McDonald's or whatever, right? So you name it, and you know, like it is very native, it is very unique. You cannot do it nothing like this with other ad, let's say, environments, right? So that's what will happen in 4 years.
And that's a very interesting point, actually. I hadn't really considered that. Rachel, what are your thoughts on that one you just said, kind of how advertisers can make the most of it? And, you know, from a smaller advertiser perspective, are there any hurdles, if you pardon the unintentional pun there, are there any hurdles that they should be aware of before they look to advertising against, you know, Olympic and Paralympic content?
I mean, I'd have thought that perhaps for smaller advertisers, maybe actually it's the potential of advertising against Olympic content programmatically is actually an exciting opportunity for them, because perhaps the financial barriers to entry are lower, you know, and so maybe it's an opportunity for experimentation for those smaller brands that wouldn't necessarily be thinking of big, wide-scale, you know, TV-style campaigns. So that could be potentially exciting. I'm sure the barriers, though, for them would be making sure that they've got, you know, a sufficient budget to be investing in the right channel in order to get a decent return. And maybe that comes back to Andrew's point that this is likely to be an experimental year for programmatic advertising in the Olympics, because I can see that there's a huge amount of potential if we can get all the technology tools and solutions stacked up nicely for future Olympics. There's not only some of the mechanisms that you mentioned there, Andrew, that are commonly used in gaming, but I think there's all sorts of other things. Like, what about, you know, buying programmatically on digital out-of-home screens, and, you know, when you're actually there for customers and consumers that might be there, and all the other things that you could be doing just throughout an environment at the same time. So it might not just be for people that, for example, are in Paris watching the Olympics. It could be for people that are holidaying in France, and there is just some kind of little catch that gets them focus in on what's happening. Great for travel brands who maybe want to say, so you might have missed the Olympics, but don't miss visiting our hotel in Paris, because it's great to be here even when the Olympics isn't on. Whatever. You know, there's got to be loads of opportunities in across multiple channels to get really interesting campaigns going. The other thing is, the Olympics is a bit of a catch-all, really, isn't it? It's not like other sporting events. It's not special interest, but it could be special interest. So it's going to pick up all the people that have got particular interests in particular sports, but it's also going to pick up a really nice wide audience of people that just happen to be watching it. It's also on all the time for the however many weeks it's on. 2 weeks, is it? 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks for the Paralympics, I think. So, you know, that's a long period of time during which you could really reach an enormous audience. So I see mostly opportunity. I think the challenge will be on perhaps, you know, the technical capabilities and the degree to which particularly small advertisers can harness the right technical capabilities to make the most of those budgets. And maybe that's where EPOM comes in.
I reckon it probably is.
Yeah, we used to... many customers of EPOM, they do these betting ads, and for us it's just a sure thing to add and some extra facilities when the Champions League's football matches are going on, because the traffic is spiking and the betting level of the usage level is spiking, and we have to support it no matter what. I mean, like the same with the Olympics, we have to do it, but you should harness this emotional aspect of the Olympics. I mean, like,
yes,
when you're watching your country athlete, you know, like competing for something, and when he wins or he takes first, second or whatever result he gets, he or she gets, that's emotional aspect is huge. That's where you can sell something, when you can get the conversion actually of anything, hotel, travel, whatever.
There was a great quote from one of our speakers on stage at ATS Singapore this year, where he said, we were talking about advertising fatigue, and he was saying, yes, humans' attention span is limited, but our capacity for emotion is infinite. And I thought, that's very true, actually. So if you can tap that sweet spot of, you know, engaging people on an emotional level, I think that suddenly opens up a bit more attention. And think about all the other things that are associated with the Olympics. It's the Paralympics as well, which becomes a really interesting series of stories of how people got there, of what, you know, what they journeyed through in order to become these professional athletes. There's also the refugee Olympic team athletes, you know, and there's already a documentary on Netflix about this year's refugee team. So anyone that's competing from countries that aren't participating or is in exile, you know, it's really, there's a lot of angles there.
emotion is a lovely way to end this conversation. Our capacity for emotion is infinite.
That's it. And on that note, Lindsay, just before you wrap up, I'm going to be cheeky. I'd like a semi-final prediction for the game this evening, because I'm sensing that Andrew's a football fan, and Lindsay, I know you are. Yeah. What's going to happen?
Beautiful. Well, I have to say England, obviously. I can't not say England. England will win.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Let me just join this forecast, because I have Bellingham in my fantasy football team. So I wish him luck. Let him score fantastic. Twice today, this evening.
Fantastic.
Come on, England.
Yes, come on, England. Looking forward to the game tonight.
Absolutely. And on that note, I will say thank you so much, Rachel. Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining me today.
Pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been this week's Mad Tech Podcast.